Welcome to the sixth episode of the second season of the RJOS podcast. I'm your host, Liana Tedesco. This season, we will be highlighting the winners of the He for She, the She for She, and the Courage Awards. It's been such an honor to connect with our guests, to learn about who they are, how they became to be our esteemed award winners, and what the Ruth Jackson Orthopedic Society means to them. My next guest is Dr. Audrey Tsao. Dr. Tsao is an arthroplasty surgeon by trade at Kaiser Permanente. She is the winner of the She for She Award, which recognizes a female orthopedic surgeon who serves as a strong mentor and sponsor for women in orthopedics, supporting and empowering females at all stages of their careers to achieve their professional goals. Dr. Tsao's nomination letters called her a pioneer advocate for women in orthopedic surgery. Not only a mentor to many, but also a sponsor, she has empowered women to take on leadership roles and lead teams. Learning about Dr. Tsao's career and her motivations was such a pleasure. She gave an amazing perspective on how things have changed and where she sees the future of women in orthopedics. Let's get to it. First and foremost, I would like to thank today's guest, Dr. Audrey Tsao, for joining us. Dr. Tsao, thank you so much for joining us.
It is my pleasure to be here.
I think we should start off with the elevator pitch. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, so I am of Chinese American descent here in the U.S., born in the U.S., and the first and only physician in my immediate family. My background is actually a biomedical engineer. I went to undergrad as an engineer. I come from a strong engineering family, loved biomedical engineering and material science engineering, but found out I just talked too much. Most engineers tended to be a little bit more quiet than me, not quite as rambunctious and bubbly as, shall we say. And one of my advisors in my undergraduate years said, "Have you ever thought about going into medicine? You have a great personality for that." And I think that's because I talked too much during the engineering portions of our labs and said, "No, I hadn't thought about that." So stayed and completed my requirements as an undergraduate and said, "Well, I don't know if I'm going to get in, but what's the worst thing that'll happen is I won't get into medical school and I will go on to engineering. Graduate school and do what I originally thought I was going to do in life." Lo and behold, got into medical school and I was like, okay, now I really do have to go to medical school. Went to medical school, basically said, "There's no heck way I'm going to go into surgery. Those people are crazy. They get up way too early, stay way too late, work way too hard, you know, and they wander around and they don't look happy at all. That's not what I want to do." So I did my surgical rotation in probably the most ill-advised location for serious surgical students at that time. Loved it. I was like, now I'm in real trouble. And during that time, I was exposed to orthopedics. Now, you would have thought it was a good match, but since I was a little bit of a red herring here for going to medical school, orthopedics was not top on your list. And most of the people I had met in orthopedics had been headed for orthopedics their entire life.
Right.
And I kind of fell into it, found out I really liked it. And I was very fortunate. I was very encouraged by all of my residents and all of my attending staff as a medical student. So they kept telling me, "You have to try, you have to try, you got to go. You're a perfect orthopedic surgeon. You're an engineer, it's perfect." And at that time, that was a little bit more unusual. So I said, "Well, what the heck? You know, I'm going to apply. And if I don't get in, then I'll do a year in general surgery. And if I don't do that, then I'll go into peds," which is what I thought about going into, peds or OBGYN. Applied, got in, and then the rest is kind of history. Fell in love with my field of choice, which was arthroplasty. I may be the first fellowship trained woman in arthroplasty in the U.S., but I'm definitely one of the first, and did the same thing. So my life is one of those things where I didn't know I wasn't supposed to do it, thought it was fun, did it, Decided to apply, joint arthroplasty, got a fellowship, and kind of went on to my career. I've spent my life not following the rules, mainly because I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to follow them or not follow them, and kind of following my heart, if you will. And now I am what I am, and I do what I do, and here I am talking to you and thinking it's quite hilarious that anybody even wants to hear this story.
I love that story. I think it's good for anyone. I mean, I think there's such a focus on knowing what you want to do so early in medical school and residency even, and having, you know, this story of someone who's like, I just decided I wanted to do it at some point and I did it. It's great. Like, that's what people want to know.
If there's one thing I wish when I went through school, went through residency, became an attending in my first academic job, et cetera, I think one of the things that you always worry about is you worry about failing. And I probably learned more, number one, from other people's failures. I watched what other people did and what they failed at or didn't fail at. And it wasn't because they failed. What I found out was not everything fits everybody. And if you can look around you and see what's going on around you and figure out if that works for you or doesn't work for you, learn from that experience that may not be your personal experience. Adapt it, morph it. I probably have learned more, as painful as it may be, from falling flat on my butt and totally messing something up. Because when you stand out for whatever reason, your successes are really, really noticeable, but then your failures are really, really noticeable. And you have to learn to negotiate that. And when you learn to negotiate that and kind of maybe not take yourself so seriously, realize that it's human to fail. What you have to learn to do is to say, I'm not giving up. I didn't get it right this time. I'm going to get up and I'm going to do it again. And when you don't get it right the second time, the third time, the 20th time, the 100th time, you keep on getting up. Because every single time you get up and you think about it, you'll get better. And that's something that I had a very hard time learning. I'm glad that it's something that I'm still in the process of learning. I tell everybody that one of the things that I had the advantage of is I've made every mistake in the book, and I've made every faux pas you probably could do. I still survived, and it's been a great ride. It's been a wonderful challenge, but it's been a wonderful experience. And it's something that I think that if you're committed to it, it works great. You just got to know that that's what it is. And despite any naysayers, despite anybody else, you'll find your supporters, you'll find your advocates, you'll find your mentors and your mentees. And it's always ends up okay. I'm a big believer in that. I'm kind of a glasses half full, half empty type of thing. I prepare for the worst and hope for the best, and the world usually ends up somewhere in between.
I think that is an excellent outlook and perspective. So I want to get back to the mentorship thing in a little bit, but before I do, I would love to know, is there a particular mistake or a failure that you can think of that you feel was in a way defining for you, that you think, oh, I made this mistake and then I changed something and my life or my career changed?
So probably, I think when I made a decision that I wanted to go into orthopedics, I made it very late in my career. I laid for a medical student, right? I made the mistake of deciding I liked this field. I thought it was wonderful. It was late in my third year. Mm-hmm. And I was told at that time, it's too late. Be prepared to spend a gap year and then do that. And my mistake was in believing them. I prepared for it. I changed all my fourth year rotations. I went in and talked to my registrar. I'll never forget her, Mrs. Antosik, who was a huge supporter. I came in, announced this to her. She looked at me because I was only the second woman out of my medical school to ever even want to apply. Got up, walked around me, close the door. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. Wasn't in trouble. She was just wanted to make sure that I knew what I was getting into. So probably one of the things that was a mistake for me is not figuring out certain things. The timing of such things is definitely can make your life a little bit easier. I think if you follow the routine path, what I learned from that is you don't always have to do that. You may have to make up some groundwork, and you may have to get a little tough on how you do it. So I think that's one mistake. But I think the other mistake, or mistakes, if I can say, is they always tell you as a surgeon, you have to be a little tough, right? I'm one of those people that if something goes wrong in surgery, my patient has a bad outcome, I hurt somebody's feelings, somebody is upset, whether I had something I could directly do about it or not do about it, I'm one of those people that doesn't have a tough skin for that. It always affects me. And what I did learn was those mistakes can hurt you quite badly if you don't learn how to cope with them. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to spend the time because you can't let it devastate you. Everybody in their medical career, especially us in orthopedic surgery, we're in a high stakes profession. You will make a mistake in surgery. You will make a misdiagnosis. You will chart something that you should have or shouldn't have. It's a minefield out there, right? You do your best. I don't know that there's any physician I know that didn't go into this field because they have a good heart and a good mind and a good soul. But despite all that, we make mistakes. And the mistake is not learning from it and not doing your best recovering it and not admitting it. I think it's very tough to learn from your personal mistake when you can't acknowledge it. Give yourself the time to grieve and to be upset. In my case, take a hot shower or a hot bubble bath, as the case may be. But then the mistake is not to learn from that and to repeat that same mistake. I think that's one of the toughest things to do. And despite that, you will repeat a mistake. I mean, it happens. And you can say, shoot, I should have learned that. I did this the same thing 10 years ago or 5 years ago or yesterday or whatever it is. Why did I not remember that? And it takes repetition, takes learning that. So I think the one regret I would have is on the mistakes I didn't learn quick enough. The one thing I would say is the fact that I very early on learned that I couldn't just shrug it off, just let it roll off my back. And that was the advice I got. And it didn't work for me. It's never worked for me. Probably never will work for me. And it's one of those things that, for me, I take everything to heart. And I learned to make that more of a strength than a weakness. Understanding it's a little bit of both.
I think that's great because so much of residency, you go through it or your training or being an attending, it's like, just let it go. It's not personal. But if you feel it's personal to you. So having a mechanism to, you know, deal with it and cope is so important, I think. And it's a good lesson for everyone. Certainly me, I take things too hard on myself, and who isn't? So it's nice to know we're not the only ones out there. There's plenty of people who are successful and have been doing this for way longer than us that feel the same way and have found a way to make it work.
Yeah, I do think that's one of the things that is different about women versus men in terms of how they cope with adversity.
Yeah.
I think I can't tell you why exactly that is. I just know that that is, or maybe we express it more. And I think that when you look at the numbers as they're starting to come out, a lot of patients feel that women are more empathetic, they're more sympathetic, and some of them will choose a woman physician over a male physician because of those qualities. So I think to deny that within ourselves is a mistake because it's a strength. Mm-hmm. Where I think the problem is that we've incorporated ourselves into a very different culture. And so allowing yourself the time and energy to figure it out. And if you can't figure it out yourself, gathering your forces, your gal pals, if you will. And sometimes your gal pals are actually guys.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're gals. And gender doesn't have a whole lot to do with it sometimes, but it's somebody that maybe understands how you tick. And you have to reach out. I think it's helpful to reach out to people who are more senior than you and people who are more junior than you. I probably learned some very special lessons from people who were my residents and fellows that I was taken aback and surprised and said, wow. And so it gives you a little bit of an awareness that a different perspective is all that's needed, not necessarily always seniority and training and experience, although that does help, I think. But learning from those that are around you and that you're theoretically mentoring is just as important. I'm probably a stronger physician when I learned from my mentees and my students and my residents. I mean, they taught me an incredible amount. I would hope that people who knew me early on in my career and later on in my career would tell you I'm a better mentor now than I was 30 years ago, because you always want to get better. But I am definitely a different mentor than I was 30 years ago. 30 years ago, I was probably a little too tough and a little less flexible and not as understanding because of my personal drive. And I didn't spend the time understanding that not everybody gets driven to their career and their surgical path or whatever it is they're doing the same way. Y'all end up there. As they say, there's more than one way to climb a mountain. Some of us climb it a little tougher than others. Some of us learn to take the easier route early on. But you all get to the top, and I think that's important. And it's an accomplishment that's to be congratulated and lauded. Now, I may not always approve of how somebody got there, to be honest, but they got there. Mm-hmm. And you have to acknowledge that accomplishment in their armamentarium too, and maybe learn a little bit something from that. So it's just kind of having that insight, if you will, to take a step back. And when you don't feel like you have that perspective, getting it from somebody else.
I think that's such a wonderful way to think about it. And knowing that, you know, over time you grow not only as a mentee, a mentor, like you just have to grow. And if you're continuously growing, you're going in the right direction. And that segues perfectly into my next question, because I think we now know what kind of mentor you are. But being one of the first women to go into arthroplasty in the U.S., being one of the first medical students from your medical school to go into orthopedics, you know, who can you talk a little bit about your mentorship? Who were your mentors and how did they help you, you know, take the next step in your career at each, you know, path?
So I was very fortunate. First of all, my career choice as an undergraduate is engineering, which is a male-dominated field. So my first mentor, in all honesty, was my dad, right? So, you know, he was known as being a tough guy. He's a professor, mm-hmm. a professor of mechanical engineering. And his students would tell you he was a tough guy, but always understanding and willing to listen and willing to help. But his expectations were no less than you do your absolute best. And then when you think you do your best, you have a little bit more to give. So that is the man that was my father, but also my first mentor. And that mentorship always made me think that my mentor always has my best interests at heart. So I was able to go into life knowing that my mentors, or feeling that my mentors always had my best ability, that they didn't have a second agenda. Whether or not that was true or not, I was oblivious, and I choose to be oblivious, right? But for me, it was that way, and that role model was my dad. Well, as I went through, training and residency, my next set of mentors actually were people who are now actually very famous in their respective fields. But these were at that time second, third, and fourth year residents and fellows, and they were all encouraging, and they never made me feel that I was unique or different in a bad way. They kept trying to say, you need to expand on your talents. You need to do this. You need to go. You need to do this. And so I did. And some of those people are, they probably don't even know who I am anymore. But I will tell you that one of my resident mentors was a guy named Steve O'Brien, who has since then become a very famous sports guy. Strong mentor. He was a third-year resident at that time. I'm giving away my age. And did everything he could think of to help teach me, encourage me, and tell me to go ahead. Another guy named Dan Buss, same thing. The two of them were like dual teamed together at their residency. Again, a very famous guy, same thing. So I was fortunate in that respect. And then when I got to my residency, same experience. Every single one of my attendings, I did early work and research with a guy named David Stolberg. I don't think he even noticed that I was a girl. I mean, he just knew I was a PGY2 resident and I worked hard. And that's all I wanted and that's all I asked and that's what he noticed. I published my first 5 papers with him. To this day, I'm indebted to him. And he still remembers me. We still communicate. And he still has proven to be an incredible advocate for diversity and women. He's mentored, after me, many other women to go into the field. Ever since then, you know, I could give you a list forever and ever. I know that a lot of people feel that there is some, you know, microaggression or downing of folks or whatever. But I also know that a lot of people who are in that situation are also a product of their environment. So if you think about the way it was 30 years ago, what the environment was in orthopedic surgery, it's very different now. Medicine is very different now. And I think it's all great. But all those people that were in that position before did the same thing that I think I did. They learned. They realized that maybe something 30 years ago was maybe not a great thing to do. And they changed it. And they kept changing and they kept changing. And I think when you have people like that, both men and women, in whatever area of diversity and, you know, for parity of all areas and all fields, the area gets better. And then the more we learn about it, the better we get. I definitely had some preconceptions and probably some issues myself coming out as a young attending my very first time coming through, right? I definitely... hopefully have learned from that and changed that. But I think my mentors learned as much from me as I from them and vice versa. I know that when I was a resident and a fellow, definitely changed some people's concepts and thoughts about certain attitudes. And they did it because there was a one-on-one interaction. It wasn't a quest. It became a one-on-one relationship. And, well, geez, if you can do that, why can't the next person do that? And why shouldn't the next person do that? And then the next person is doing that. And that's the way it is. And it's that gradual change. Change is very slow and sometimes it's very hard. But if you keep doing it, eventually you get to where you want to get to. And I'm a firm believer in that. I don't think we're where we need to be yet. I hope that it's a better place now than it was in the past, and that those of us who were in the forefront of this, if you will, not by choice necessarily, but by whatever reason, have kind of made it a little bit better because we did it because we didn't we didn't know we weren't supposed to do it, so we did it. You know, we had fun.
Right.
We enjoyed it. It was a career. Orthopedics is a wonderful career and a wonderful field. I would not choose to be anything else at this point in my life. And I continue to love it. And I hope that I just really feel sad for all the people who don't want to be orthopedic surgeons, because I don't understand that at all. But I'm glad they are, because there are fields that I would not be good at and don't want to do. But I think orthopedics is one of the best things to go into, and couldn't have made a better career choice for myself.
This is the kind of enthusiasm that gets people into orthopedics. And I think for anyone who's like, why would I do that? They should probably just listen to this conversation, because the enthusiasm you have for orthopedics, it even like gets me excited and I'm doing it. So I appreciate that. And I think I can speak for every woman who's just starting their career, you know, for us to have women like you to look up to who have done it and in a way that's so elegant without saying like, I'm a woman, here I am. You're just like, I'm going to be great at my job and I'm going to keep paying it forward because mentorship is a two-way street and we're going to keep going and it's going to get better even if it's slow is really inspiring.
Yeah. And you need to enjoy the ride and you need to enjoy the path. Anything that is an onerous duty will not last.
Yeah.
And I think that people in orthopedics, people in surgery, people in medicine, especially recently with everything the world has gone through with the pandemic and everything, we forget.
Yeah.
It's very easy to forget the joy of medicine. I mean, if you are post-call, as I'm post-call today, didn't sleep much, my bones are getting old, and I am like, as I'm sitting here and speaking to you, I'm like, you know, I'm kind of a little tired, you know, and I'm still doing this. Why am I still doing this? I have a lot of friends who go, I can't believe you take frontline call, and I still do. But there is no better satisfaction for me personally, as a physician, to feel that I've given the gift of mobility, which is one of my bylines in WOGO, but the gift of pain relief, the gift of stabilization, the gift of musculoskeletal care that I can give. I'm in a unique position. I can give this gift because I've been trained this way, technically, maybe because I have some talent in the area, but I can do that. And you have a patient at the other end, maybe they don't say it right away because they're post-op and they're not feeling so good, but then they come walking into your office. And I had a little lady come in. She was 78. She came in and she was dancing down the hall of my clinic, literally dancing. And she said, I'm doing this because you told me that I would be dancing when you were done at 1 year. And I wanted to show you that I can dance. And this is how I danced at my granddaughter's wedding.
Wow, I love that.
How can you trade that? You that's priceless. I mean, I would do the job for free to see that, you know? And that's a gift. That's a gift to me from my patient. And hopefully I've given her a gift as well. So it's a fair exchange.
Definitely fair. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about Ruth Jackson. You've obviously been in the field for a long time. Can you tell me when you first learned about Ruth Jackson and how you first got involved?
So I actually am, it's actually pretty funny. So I learned about Ruth Jackson relatively early in my training career. And Ruth Jackson was actually something I didn't join early, believe it or not. I kept track of it, you know, I saw what they did and that type of thing. And the main reason I didn't join early was because I was looking for arthroplasty. Mm-hmm. And at that time, guess what? We didn't have a lot of women in arthroplasty. And so I kind of was like treading water very hard to jig into the arthroplasty societies and things like that. I got more interested and more motivated when I became involved with my mission group, WOGO, Women Orthopedic Global Outreach. And this group of women, phenomenal surgeons, also arthroplasty surgeons. Can't believe I can tell you this, but we have 10 now, you know, in this own group only, and there are many more out there now. But when we were trying to recruit for medical students, residents, and fellows to join us on our mission group, and we've been in existence over 20 years now, that's when RJOS came back into my highlight and my profile. And I saw the things that they did, the advocacy they did, and the accomplishments they did. They treaded where things were sometimes not so popular, and they treaded where things were sometimes not so discussed. Kudos to the society for doing that, because they were ahead of the times for that. And they pioneered many things, I think, way in advance. I currently think that RJOS is continuing to make its mark on the field of orthopedics. It's commonly known. And as soon as you tell anybody that you're a woman orthopedist, the first question out of their mouth is, of course, you're a member of RJOS, are you not? And I have to laugh because they can't conceive of a woman orthopedic surgeon not a member of RJOS. So that said, I do think that, like everything else, RJOS is something that I think that is a resource. I think it provides camaraderie. I think it provides a platform for discussion and a platform for communication. Now, people are as active or not as active as they want to be. And that varies from people's time in their lives. Most women, at some point in time, if you're busy with a toddler and a little one at home, you barely have enough time to take a shower and take care of the child and the family and whatnot. RJOS can go to the back burner. Some people are very unusual, can do everything at once. But the one thing I have learned is that most societies that want to harness the willpower and the woman power of the gals needs to be understanding and aware of the fact that we go through phases in our life. If you're not willing to do that, you probably don't want me as a member, and that's okay because I'm definitely going to go through phases, right? There's going to be times I can be available and there's going to be times I'm not available. And I think that trying to balance, this is the nebulous pursuit of balance in your life, which I don't know if anybody has ever achieved that ever in their life. If they do, please come be my mentor, because it's one of those things that's always looking for, yeah, always trying to pursue. And so for that reason, I think that that's important. When I was chair of the Women in Arthroplasty Committee for AUKUS, which is one of the main arthroplasty groups, one of the things that I wanted to emphasize, and I learned this from a variety of different sources, one of which was RJOS, that you must provide for a successful committee where you want to harness that know-how and that power, flexibility.
Yeah.
You must allow flexibility on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour, minute-to-minute, but you must allow that flexibility also for times in their life, and also allow the openness to do the discussion. The idea is to provide safe space, right? Now, you may not always be agreed with, and the final direction may not be the way to go, or is chosen not to go in the direction you want to advocate, but to create the safe space for the discussion where you're allowed to express things and you're allowed to proceed with different projects and they can fall on their butt or they can be successful, I think is incredibly important. I think RJOS does that also. And I think they've done an incredible job affiliating with the AAOS and doing that in ways that are to be admired and to be modeled after in many other different committees and societies. So that's why I think RJOS is incredibly important.
That's great. Are you involved in anything with the society now?
For RJOS? Actually, no, except for the fact that, so this is a funny story, okay? I actually am not an official member of any particular committee for RJOS, mainly because I'm very active in other committees, but my current mentee from medical school found me through the RJOS site. And she sent me, you know, because the information's out there on the membership. Mm-hmm. And she sent me an email. It was very funny when I talked to her the other day. She goes, well, I looked you up and then I saw you were on IGOS and that's how I found you. And please, 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 can you be my mentor? And I'm like, of course I'll be your mentor. Of course I'll do that. I mean, RJOS's mentorship program is phenomenal. And I just had to laugh because I hadn't even officially signed up to be part of that program yet. And she still found me. So that tells you how strong RJOS is, that people find other people and are not even in there. So that membership strength is incredible.
Yeah, I think for me, I always think of RJOS as being this central place where you can connect with other female orthopedic surgeons and even male orthopedic surgeons who are members who care about the same types of things. And I think your point of RJOS being a safe space where you don't all have to agree, but it there's a platform for discussion is so important, because I think most societies have this in a way, but I think there's something special about it in this particular society.
I would agree with you. I think that one thing with RJOS that's important is the history. It's the first, I think it's the only, and because of that long history, they gather respect from the other societies and the other committees throughout orthopedics, and no matter what field you are, whether it's hand, sports, peds, joints, spine, whatever. So that standing is a credit to RJOS and vice versa to the members as well. And I do think that's unique. There are not many societies that have been around that long with that kind of respect.
The roots run deep.
Yes, absolutely.
So you are the 2023 winner of the She for She Award, which recognizes a female orthopedic surgeon who has served as a strong mentor and sponsor for women in orthopedics, supporting and empowering females at all stages of their career to achieve their professional goals. We have talked about this veiled throughout our entire conversation, and you having these mentees and WOGO and all these great initiatives you have done. What did it mean to win this award?
It meant a lot, actually. So to be given an award from your peers, not just, you know, general, you know, whatever, orthopedics or whatever, but to be recognized and acknowledged for that from my fellow women orthopedic surgeons is a very special acknowledgement and one that was very important to me. Because for me, my career path was not full-time academics. I was in academics and I went to private practice. I'm currently now with Kaiser Permanente because those career paths fit whatever I needed at that time. And as is something that I think you have to pick the right situation for you to be successful in what you want to do. I did not think I was a recognized force for women in the field, either in arthroplasty or for other women in orthopedics. Much to my surprise, I was wrong, but that made me feel very good because I personally was somebody that there are certain things I never did that perhaps my male colleagues at my age and my level would have done, because it wasn't the right thing for me to do. I had to care for family. I had to change a career path, or I had to do something different. And I did not follow the traditional stay in academics the full time. So I did not think I would be ever acknowledged as an academic. I was wrong. I did not think I would be able to mentor people when I went to private practice. You know, you think you're going into a little private practice, and I was wrong. And when I came to Kaiser Permanente, I was like, well, you know, I'm kind of doing an HMO thing, and it's like, you know, different kind of medicine. And I was wrong. So being able to do all that stuff, I think, becomes incredibly important. For it validates the style with which I chose to do my contributions. I'm not a trailblazer in the sense that I'm not the first, you know, woman president of my society. I'm not the first whatever. That is just not me. Because what I wanted to do was support people. There were some things I didn't do or wasn't qualified to do or receive by virtue of qualifications, right? I'm totally fine with that. But that doesn't mean that the gal next to me, in front of me or behind me, isn't. And if she or he, but she needs help getting there, because all I have to do is help them write a paper, provide a platform for them to do research, encourage them on a bad day, for whatever reason, that's something I can easily do as a colleague, as a friend, as a mentor, as a mentee, right? And give that kind of input. If you do that, that's promoting the people around you. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm chair of a department and usher in the promotions. But have I given advice on how to get promoted? Sure, I have. Because that's my perspective and that's my experience. Have I done different leadership roles? Absolutely. But it's not the leadership role just to lead. Leadership is also making sure that you have depth on your bench, so to speak, if I can use a football analogy, right? I need to make sure that when I move from one position, number one, I don't hold the position too long because I do think it does go stale. Number two, to make sure that there's a successor behind me and that successor is prepared and set up for success. The last thing you want is somebody to come behind you not be successful. And it is incredibly difficult to be successful in a leadership position or a project or a job or a surgery without the proper prep. And it's not always that individual's ability or timing to do the prep. Sometimes has to be done ahead of them. And I think that that's one of the things that for me was my calling. It was very important for me to make sure that that path, it's never going to be perfect, but that path was somewhat smooth, or at least make somebody aware of the fact, this is a little bit of a ticky issue. Don't do that. Wait 5 years, then do that, but not right now. And that's that institutional knowledge, if you will, of whether the job, the leadership, the project, and whatever that is, needs to be freely communicated. I think there is competition in the field of orthopedics, and sometimes that knowledge is not communicated because of a fear of competition. Okay, I get that. I've been so far surpassed by all my mentees. They're all much more famous than me. They're all phenomenal surgeons. They are all, you know, associate deans, you know, incredibly versed in their careers. They're so far have achieved so much more than I ever could have thought to have achieved. My claim to fame is I know them and I'm very proud of them. And that becomes incredibly, I think, important. So for me, the She for She Award was an understanding and an acknowledgement that that is the role that I chose to play because that's the one I'm comfortable with and that's the one I'm good at. I don't need to be the chair, the first author, the whatever, because that's, you know, that's not for me what makes me happy, you know. Right. Earlier in my career, it might have, but to be honest, not now. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of heat when you're in that frontline limelight, you know, and I like to relax and stay in the shadows. Do I want to be a resource? Do I want to be there? You know, am I there to provide the safety net in whatever form for a fashion? I think those people who I work with and who I work around me know that. I have been incredibly blessed to be working and in a field where I have many, many talented people around me. I mean, the talent is incredible. I'm really glad I didn't have to compete against orthopedic surgery now because they probably wouldn't let me in. But
I doubt that. You're a mechanical engineer.
No, seriously. I work hard, but I'm not the most gifted. I'm not the most intelligent. None of those things. But what I can say is I think that our field, our careers are better because these people have been helped. And those people know that there's a support system around them. Sometimes all it is being a support system and just being available by phone. I look around, at least for me in my field of arthroplasty, if you had ever told me when I started off in my career, I would look around at my society meeting and see so many women doing so many incredible things on the podium, in committees, being experts in their fields, conducting courses as course directors. I would have told you that I wasn't sure that it was going to happen in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. Definitely happened in my lifetime, way early in my lifetime. And my kudos and hats off to them. I just think they're just phenomenal. And I think we attracted them to the field because of some of the things that happened before they got there. And I think they their acknowledgement through is, for me, the She for She Award. And it's one I'm very touched by. I can't tell you how much I'm touched by it.
I think it's a huge accomplishment, and congratulations to you. I mean, we didn't meet then, but I was there. And I think hearing all of the stories and the letters of your nomination, it's really inspiring. I think I also feel passionate about mentorship and, you know, supporting women in the field and bringing more diversity to our field, because I think it's something that we are lacking. And to see that you've been doing it for so long, and you say that's other people's accomplishments, but I think their accomplishments are your accomplishments because you help them get where they are. So it's something to be incredibly proud of.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm just very pleased that we are at the point we are in the field of orthopedics, at least. I still think we have a lot of work to do. I really do.
Yeah.
But at least we've made progress.
Progress is important. Progress is important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What do you think is really the biggest challenge for us for improving diversity in orthopedics? And I don't just mean gender diversity. It's racial diversity, ethnic diversity, all of those combined.
So I think one of the biggest hurdles that we have that we're making a dent into is a self-awareness that the problem exists and that every single person has to be part of the solution. Traditionally, I think the field of orthopedics has been very stereotypically one type of orthopedic surgeon. And not that that's wrong, it's just that that's who the field was attracted to. And I think that the awareness and the acknowledgement, because I do think there are folks who really don't think there is an issue, because they don't personally see it as an issue. And I think that awareness and that word does have to go out. The second thing, I think, aside from self-awareness, is that orthopedics in itself is an incredibly challenging career field. Our knowledge base is expanding so quickly. Techniques are changing. What was standard of care 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago has changed in your field. And we're all incredibly busy running practices, taking care of patients, trying to do our best. So that balance for understanding that there's more to it in our field, in our career, is also a challenge and something that has to be brought, I think, as part of our training and our ethos, if you will, in orthopedics. Orthopedics is very much, in some ways, almost a cut and dry, right? Our field is based on anatomy and musculoskeletal function. And the understanding that your patient may have a psychological component to it that may or may not be related to their diversity or their background. And that connection as a physician-surgeon may be part of that tie-in is something I think that we're still lacking some, and I think that we can continue to improve on that.
Yeah, I think we have a ways to go, but we're getting there. And I think that organizations like RJOS and Nth Dimensions, they're trying to bring this awareness to the forefront, and I hope we can a little bit be a part of that. So Dr. South, thank you so much for joining me. I do have one final question. I've asked all my guests, if you could give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
So I think the one piece of advice I would give to myself is that when things don't go right, don't be too hard on yourself. Take it into your soul, learn from it, grow from it, and understand that who you will be in the future is because of things like this. And I think that's a very common lesson that we all have to learn. But I know that when I was my younger self, it's not one that I really would have taken to heart. And it's one that I wish I had listened to and taken to heart much earlier. I think that my career path would have been a bit easier. I think my career path may have been perhaps even a little different. But that is the one advice that I would have given to myself. And I actually give that to my current mentees because I think it's one that we all have to learn to mentor ourselves as well as being our own best mentee. I think if you do that combination, career-wise, personal-wise, life-wise, it all works out.
I think that's excellent advice, and I'm going to certainly take that with me. So Dr. Zhao, thank you so much for joining us. This has been such a great conversation. I have really learned so much from you and just your perspective on your career and mentorship and sponsorship. I think anyone who listens to this is going to take away a lot of good pearls.
All I can say is get in there, have fun, love what you're doing, and it'll all be fine.
I love that.
All right. Well, take care. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation. If you're interested in learning more about some of the programs offered by the Ruth Jackson Orthopedic Society or getting involved in our committees, check out our show notes. On another note, the RJOS annual meeting is coming up. Please join us in San Francisco on February 12, 2024. In addition to the annual meeting, RJOS is hosting its first annual research day to showcase the research of our membership. Visit rjos.org/events to learn more. Until next time, I'm your host, Liana Tedesco, and this was the RJOS podcast.